I'd like to introduce the first gentleman on the dais. This ain't no roast, so we'll be good. I'm Bill Shirk, sound recordings archivist at Bowling Green State University, and Satan is real. Okay? Or not. My wife said, "Oh, you're going to wear that to the meeting?" It's okay, Bonnie, you know.
I thought that was satin.
Yeah, well, it is satin. Satin sheets, eh? Satin sheets. We like satin sheets. So the first presenter on this stupendous occasion, and it's a two-person ride through paradise tonight today. You're correct?
Yes.
Yeah, two-person ride to paradise. Dave Lewis, we know him as Uncle Dave, excuse me, because I'm Uncle Bill. So this is Uncle Dave Lewis, and I'm reading from the biography from the latest journal so that we're up to date as much as possible. All right, he's a freelance composer, writer, critic, and sometime filmmaker. That's the only thing I worry about is sometime. He worked for nearly a decade as an in-house editor at the former All Music Guide, now part of, Rovi Crap. Okay. And before that, as a classical buyer for Tower Records and the Virgin, I always like the name Virgin, Megastore on the West Coast. Lewis has been an ARSC member since 1999 and has delivered papers at several conferences in addition to contributing numerous reviews and articles to the ARSC Journal and other print publications. In the 1980s, Lewis headed a small run underground record label and has been a fixture at radio since 1978. He currently contributes features to NPR affiliate WVXU-FM in Cincinnati. My first true contact with Dave was when he came down to Bowling Green to do research on, was it Homer Road Heaver? Yeah, it was Homer Road Heaver, right. The Brewer's Big Horses Can't Run Over Me. So now we have Dave Lewis, and later, I mean, we're expecting to see Dennis Rooney because he's the other half of this presentation. I don't see. Okay, we're good in time, and he probably knows we're good. So, but he knows that I'm emceeing this thing. So, okay, here we are, Dave Lewis.
Okay, we're going to try to sync the animation to the audio on the count of three. One, two, three. Where'd the audio go? There it is. Try again. No, it's not. We'll go back to this one. Oh, well, play the audio, please. Thank you.
Lavina, the sensational new oatmeal skin treatment that softens, whitens, and protects the complexion, brings you Hal Kemp and his international favorites.
Band leader, composer. Okay, now you can hold that back. Thank you. Bandleader, composer, arranger, and multi-instrumentalist Hal Kemp attended the University of North Carolina in the 1920s and founded his band here in Chapel Hill as the Carolina Club Orchestra, naming it after the student dance hall once located on this very, in this town on the campus that's here. Though he went on to become one of the top band leaders of the 1930s, few today are familiar with his achievements beyond the one hit that has survived the decades that have passed since his early death, Got a Date with an Angel. I have a real passion for Hal Kemp's music, and I am honored to speak on him in the town that he and his Carolina Club Orchestra called home. Before we move on, I'd like to thank researcher Rebecca Forstie, who collaborated with me on this project, Dennis Rooney, whom you will hear from shortly, Rich Cagnotti, David Lennick, Vince Giordano, Dan Levinson, Kurt Nock, Bob Conrad, Raw Hoffman, Frank Donovan, Ate Van Delden, Ross Laird, Vinnie Pilote, Elizabeth Searles, and James Hirshhorn of the Rutgers Institute of Jazz Studies. Next frame. One back. There we go. Hal Kemp was born in Marion, Alabama on March 27, 1904. His father was a civil engineer with the railroad, and his mother was a poet. Hal made his professional debut as a musician when he was just a child, playing piano at the Bonita Theater in Marion for the princely lump sum of $2 a night. His family moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, where he attended Alexander Graham High School, and he was already active in music. In Kemp's high school yearbook, one of his fellow students commends him on his ability to lead a band. Next frame. In 1922, Kemp enrolled in the University of North Carolina and became active in just about all of the student music organizations, including this saxophone quartet, except for the Mandolin Club. He wasn't a member of that one. In 1922, he also founded the Carolina Club Orchestra, which was the first hot dance band at UNC. Word of their excellence reached band leader and talent scout Paul Specht in New York, who sent the band out on a cruise ship to London and back during their summer vacation in 1924. And while in London, the Carolina Club band made its first recordings for English Columbia. Next frame. Let's have track two now. Off on that one. Can we go to a format where it stops at the end of each track? Thank you. In Charleston Cabin, their second recording, right away you can hear Kemp's preferences for quirky harmonic combinations, a hallmark of his style that would last his whole career. Among Hal Kemp collections held here at UNC, not here, but in town, there is a group of letters home from Kemp on this voyage. Vince Giordano has read them, and he told me about a passage where Kemp states that the British band on board the ship they were playing was getting less applause than they were. So the British musicians expressed their appreciation for the young Kemp band by hauling their big steamer trunk of arrangements out to the deck and heaving it over the side. One very important passenger who felt differently about them was the Prince of Wales, Edward VIII. One very important, I read that. He fancied the Carolina Club Orchestra both on the trip over and coincidentally on the way back, where the band allowed him to sit in on the drums and whack away at them while they played. News of this reached the tabloids back in England and stirred up some measure of outrage, causing embarrassment for the royal family. This incident, combined with complaints from English musicians protesting against competition, led to restrictions levied on American dance bands traveling to England, which remained in place for some time. Nevertheless, in the short term, it was great publicity for this little college band from the South. Next frame. Next frame? Okay. Sorry. The Carolina Club Orchestra returned in triumph to Chapel Hill for the start of the next semester, but they had also managed to connect with Patti Records in New York City, arranging for trips north on holidays and breaks to make records in the coming months. One of these, Who Takes Care of the Caretaker's Daughter, was Kemp's first hit, issued at least 8 times on different releases and appearing as far away as Poland. One can hear why this hot record was popular. Okay. At the end of the school year, Kemp and reed man Ben Williams quit the original Carolina Club Orchestra, which was then taken over by Slats Randall, who was a pianist. Kemp founded a new band featuring some UNC musicians that would remain with him for years to come. And go ahead and advance it to the next frame. And this is from a 1937 Melody Maker. This is a better version of the photo. That's Hal in the center. Up here is John Scott Trotter, who, and these are all, I'm pointing out folks from UNC, okay? Trotter was a pianist and also the main arranger along with Kemp of the band, and he left in 1936. To the left of him is Skinny Ennis, who was the band's drummer and also main singer. And he became a star in his own right. And he was with the band, Kemp band, until 1937. Down here in the corner is Saxie Dowell, who was a singer and a reed man, and also a fella who wrote kind of funny novelty songs that were very popular. And you know them, but you don't know that he wrote them. And finally, over here next to Hal, is Ben Williams, who was a member of the Hal Kemp Orchestra from its first day to its last, and actually kind of led the band with Hal. Next frame, please. Actually, let's go back to that last frame. On August the 20th, 1926, the new Hal Kemp Orchestra recorded for a mobile Columbia truck in Atlanta. One of the resulting sides, Blue Rhythm, is based on the New Orleans Rhythm Kings standard Farewell Blues. To my ear, it is one of the most amazing records made by a white territory band in the 1920s. And this is the one that needs a little volume. Whole tone. Trotter on piano. Trumpeter Dick Mackey. Mm-hmm. that record is so obscure that it doesn't survive in a clean copy, and that's one of the reasons why it's a little quieter than the rest of the things. The entry on Kemp in the 1926 UNC yearbook reads, "Possessing a fine personality that won him a large host of friends, combined with a musical talent that marks him as a genius, this has made Hal one of the leaders of the campus. He has rendered great service to the university through his excellent aid in fostering the musical life of the student body. With his marked ability, seriousness of purpose, fine spirit of fellowship, Hal will go on, achieving the fine things of life and meeting with the success he deserves." Next frame. Nevertheless, Kemp felt that his future was not in Chapel Hill, but in New York City. Starting out in Buffalo, by February 1927, Kemp was recording for Brunswick, and somewhat later began to play gigs in New York City. Local Chapel Hill newspapers continued to follow Kemp through his early years as a New York band leader, and this piece describes him recording for Brunswick, appearing at the Hotel Manger in New York, and broadcasting over WEAF and WJZ. It concludes, "The University of North Carolina is truly proud of what they are doing." And next frame. Yeah, we are waiting. Well, what the next frame will say, it's an ad for the Hotel Manger in New York City. And at the very bottom, it says, "Hal Kemp and his Hotel Manger Orchestra, composed of University of North Carolina collegians." So they're even using it in the New York advertising. Next frame. And the association also on the Brunswick Records, "Hal Kemp and his orchestra, formerly of the University of North Carolina." Next frame. In addition, Kemp made records for Columbia's subsidiary OCAT as the Carolina Club Orchestra. On records he made for the Plaza Music Company, Kemp's band was identified as the Carolina Collegians, or Hal's Dixie Collegians. The Kemp band also appeared in a musical short for Paramount, backing banjoist Eddie Peabody in late 1928 or early 1929. It provides a short visual record of the hot Hal Kemp band of the 1920s playing "I Don't Care," an early hit written for them by Saxie Dow. And we'll have that clip for you in just a second.
Other one, yeah, no other one, can ever do what you do when you do what you do, kissing me. There's no other one, yeah, no other one, can ever make me like
that's where we got
like
it going from
like
before,
like
so.
Constantly, when I want caresses with an 18 carat thrill, I don't need to make three guesses when I'm thinking of someone who can fill the bill. There's no other one, yeah, no
yeah,
other
go
one
away
can ever make me
there
want to want to say who do okay. I want in a great big way, no other one.
And now everybody's saying it.
It's all black for this part anyway.
I don't care.
go back to the PowerPoint. I'll just start talking. The collegiate antics and stage bits captured in this film were a standard element in the early band's performance, and this has partly led to a notion that the early Kemp band was a funny hat band, an uncomplimentary designation that Bosie White used to describe them when we were talking about them back in the early 2000s. Although Fred Waring did provide training to the early Kemp band and helped it financially from time to time, I think their records tell a different story. Kemp's O'Kev version of Walking with Susie shows that he was listening to Frank Trumbauer's records for the same label, and therefore they got the memo on swing very on. Kemp trumpeter Bob Mayhew belongs to the fraternity of players who used an approach inspired by Bix Beiderbecke, and at the time, Saxie Dowell was then pioneering a type of jazz singing, employing a relaxed and swinging approach, unlike the singers that the record companies often saddled them with. Can we have Walkin' with Susie? Okay, just hang on there, yeah. Oh, very good. Bob Mayhew. Probably Dowell. Once firmly established in the business, Kemp paid Fred Waring's interest in him forward by offering help to another Carolina Club band leader, Kay Kaiser, who credited Kemp with encouraging him to seek the national spotlight. Next Friday. In the wake of Black Tuesday, Columbia dumped a lot of contracts, including Kemp's, and in the last year of Brunswick, the Kemp band recorded exclusively for them. I'm sure that Columbia would have liked to have had that decision back, as shortly afterwards, Bunny Berrigan joined the Hal Kemp band. Both Berrigan and trumpeter Jack Purvis was active in the Kemp band in the years between 1929 and 31, and the resulting discs are the most sought after and hotly debated of all Hal Kemp selections among jazz collectors. This is a page from Rutgers' copy of the Brian Rust American, the ABDB. And You can't read it on this screen, but up in the corner is a handwritten annotation from Dan Morgenstern that reads, "Poor personnel research," underlined. Indeed, we've had the Rust books to work with about 50 years, and Brian Rust, the father of our discipline, has gone on to his earthly reward, so I think it is fair to play to admit that his Hal Kemp discography is one of his worst. Berrigan made his first recordings with Kemp in May 1930 and is heard intermittently on the Kemp on with Kemp for about a year. And here's an excerpt from Whistles, recorded in March 1931.
Hey, look out for that car! Whistles, they paid for their whistles. In jail for their whistles. Cops' whistles are bad, I don't like them. Whistles, their whistles got frisky when wedded with whiskey, and now they are sad. That's the moral. Ah, musicians love that call. That whistle's best of all. Homeward to Mammy and Pappy, we're gonna be happy. So blow, whistle, blow.
Berrigan. I have included Skinny Ennis's vocal as it represents another innovation from the Kemp band. Ennis sings on Kemp records starting in 1928, and while we often think of Louis Armstrong and Bing Crosby as spearheading the move towards a more intimate and relaxed style of singing, Ennis was their exact contemporary and sang in a way previously unheard. Breathy, unforced, and personable. Ennis's singing was recognized in its time as unique, and its potential impact on other singers is something we'll have to reserve for another study. Next. When Brunswick landed on the receivers index at the end of 1930, the company was acquired by Warner Brothers, who started to reject most of the discs that Hal Kemp made for them. In 1931, with Berrigan in tow, the band started a long homestand at the Café de Paris in France and did very well, although Berrigan's legendary unreliability began to surface at this time, and he left when they returned to America. Kemp's time in France permitted him to immerse himself in French Impressionism. He met composer Maurice Ravel, who gave Kemp a copyist manuscript of Ravel's Bolero, which he then adapted into a dance arrangement. Although he did not record it until he was under contract to ARC in 1933, Kemp first performed Bolero at the Café de Paris in 1931, much to the delight of the composer. Next track.
Thank you.
So I have realized that I'm just about out of time, and I've still got plenty here. So we're going to improvise to get the rest of the story in. This is an article from Downbeat in 1939 where Kemp explains the impact that classical music has had on dance bands. And it even accurately traces that from Song of India by Paul Whiteman in 1921. And I wish I could read it to you, but among the composers he mentions that he was interested in were Debussy, Ravel, Onegger, Sibelius, and Shostakovich. Next frame. And we'll keep going, actually. We want to, go ahead and land right here. In fact, maybe that is the best idea, is Hal Kemp was killed in an auto accident on December the 21st. Well, he was injured on the 18th, died on the 21st, outside Madera, California, while trying to take his band to a gig at the Mark Hopkins in San Francisco. He had the first ever ghost band. They played without him at the hotel, which must have been a strange experience.
What year?
1940. By 1935, he had the most popular band in the nation, and that was fueled primarily by radio. And Skinny Ennis, of course, left the band, but he kept going, and he was a major leader, and it's a shame that we don't know more about him. I seem to have lost my page that had the here it is. We have to stop now. Hal Kemp died on December 21st, 1940, from injuries sustained in an auto accident while touring. His work is neglected, and his reputation has been forgotten. He deserves better, as befits a major figure in the big band era and a favorite son of the University of North Carolina. And now we'll close out by showing a clip from 1936 that was made by the Fleischer Brothers performing a song. He probably only did this one time for the film short, but it gives us a chance to also look at Skinny and see the modern Hal Kemp band in action. Clip 3. He was 36 when he died.
No other one, yeah, no other one can ever do what you do when you do what you do, kissing me. There's no other one, yeah, no other one can ever make me like you, like I like to like you constantly. When I want caresses with an 18-carat thrill, I don't need to make three guesses when I'm thinking of someone who can fill the bill. There's no other one, yeah, no other one can ever make me want to say, who do I want in a great big way? No other one. And now everybody sing, if you like. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave. I think we all have our dates with angels right now, right?